Blog Talk Radio.
Like the folks you meet on, like to plant my feet on the Brooklyn Bridge. What a lovely view from heaven looks at you from the Brooklyn Bridge. I love to listen to the wind through her strings, the song that she sings for the town. I love to look up at the clouds in her hair. She's learned to wear like a crown. If you've been a rover, journey's end lies over the Brooklyn Bridge. Don't let no one tell you I've been trying to sell you the Brooklyn Bridge. All the folks in Manhattan are sad, 'cause they look at her and wish they had the good old Brooklyn Bridge.
Hey, welcome to House New York with Brooklyn real estate attorney Robert Howe. Today we're looking at 1031 exchanges with Fritz Trinkline of the New York Deferred Exchange Corporation. Stay tuned for Bob.
Lies over the Brooklyn Bridge. Don't let no one tell you that I've been trying to sell you the Brooklyn Bridge. You'll miss her most when you roam, 'cause you'll think of her and think of home. The good old Brooklyn. Like the folks you meet on, like to plant my feet on the Brooklyn Bridge. What a lovely view from heaven looks at you from the Brooklyn Bridge.
Welcome everyone to How's New York. I'm your host again, Robert Howe, and we're talking about a multitude of topics including real estate, community, politics, and any hot topics of the day. We're broadcasting from an undisclosed location in Brooklyn, New York, to a potential audience stretching from Longyearbyen, Norway, to Ushuaia, Tierra del Fuego, thanks to the power of Blog Talk Radio. I'm here with my executive producer, Jason Versace of Rising Tide Marketing. We have as our guest today Fritz Trinkline. Fritz Trinkline is the president of the New York Deferred Exchange Corporation. And we're going to talk about investing in real estate and how to keep the money in your pocket and out of Uncle Sam's treasury. Fritz, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Robert. I'm pleased to be with you.
Yes, great, great. Fritz, tell us a little bit about your company first, and then we'll get into the topic of saving taxes, capital gains, and how your company is able to save investors substantial sums of money from going to Uncle Sam and their treasury department. So tell us a little bit about NYDEC and what the purpose of your corporation is.
Fine. Yes, we were formed in 1991, which was the time when a very landmark new legislation came called the Safe Harbor Regulations that permit people to save tremendous amounts of tax dollars relating to something called like-kind property exchanges. So we were formed at that time and were the only company of its type for 7 years in New York. And we spent a great deal of time educating not only the general public, but professionals and anybody else that was willing to hear about this great new provision for the benefit of many.
And what was the situation before these regulations and laws came into effect with regard to real estate income?
Okay, well, property, real estate, this goes back, this code, to the 1920s, when farmers would exchange property and because of roadways, railroads, et cetera, and to just make their land work better. But the transfer of the property to each other would trigger a capital gain because the value of their farms had gone up, and under the Internal Revenue Code, it would have triggered a capital gain such that the farm would have to be sold and liquidated in order to make the farmland more suitable in a contiguous parcel. So back in those days, Congress determined that that was not appropriate, and that if you're just simply exchanging property, there should be no tax assessed. So the code evolved over the years and became more and more available to more people using it, but it became very difficult to officiate in states like New York, whereby the closing process in real estate involves many more parties than in the escrow states, such as California on the West Coast, where there's a single person sitting in a closing officiating, and it just was an unfair playing field, whereby states like New York and the Northeast were unable to logistically accomplish a 1031 exchange. And so these new rules permitted these exchanges to occur, but required a professional referred to as a qualified intermediary to officiate the transaction. And that's what happened in 1991. And that was the starting point for the Northeast to join the party, so to speak, that had existed for 70 years prior and available to other parts of the country for a long, long time. So we're playing catch-up, but thanks to professionals like you, many people are learning about it, and from small transactions of a condo in Florida that's being sold to strip malls worth $10 million and up can benefit by not paying taxes on the sale of real estate that's held for investment or business purposes.
So really this law is aimed at promoting reinvestment of what would have been a gain and a tax. That money would now be rolled over into a new property, of course having a lot of other beneficial effects, and it would encourage people to just keep investing and improving real estate. Isn't that correct?
That's correct. So in a circumstance where somebody owns a property that for one reason or another does not suit their needs and doesn't work efficiently within their own portfolio, if they would have to pay a capital gains tax that can exceed 35%, they would hold that property in an inefficient way because they don't want to pay that capital gains tax. This permits people to invest and change their real estate holdings to something that's more suitable to their own business planning and purposes, and therefore helps the overall economy progress without the burden of tax interfering with what's considered to be a continuous ownership of one type of property, a real estate parcel of property. So it's freed up the market and allows the economy to actually function more efficiently by allowing changes within this category of real estate.
Fritz, very simply, tell us what a capital gain is. What, in its simplest form, what is a capital gain?
Well, a capital gain is something that occurs if you buy any property, it can be stocks or personal property or real estate, at a certain price, and you were to sell it at a profit. The difference between the price you paid and the price you sell it for is a capital gain. Real estate has an added feature where if you purchase real estate, it's used for business or investment purposes, it's actually depreciated. So, for example, if you buy a property, a building, for $100,000 and own it for 20 years, it may have a book value of $20,000 because part of the tax code requires that you depreciate the basis. So say if you sell that property for $200,000, the gain is the difference between $200,000 sale and what your current basis of, say, $20,000 would be. You would then post $180,000 gain and then likely pay a tax bill of, like I had mentioned, say, somewhere in the neighborhood of 33 to 35% on that $180,000, which would then be over a $50,000 tax bill. So it can be a very significant number. Surprisingly, really, to this day, we have unfortunate circumstances where people will pay that tax needlessly, where they could actually have maintained their investment portfolio to the full 100%.
Right, and that's a significant chunk or percentage of the sale price. Now, you know, you've accomplished selling your property, but you have less than what you had before, essentially, by holding your property or now being able to invest in another similar type property and keep building upon your investment. It must
Correct.
Have been a real drag on that sector of the economy. So we understand now capital gain, and your company deals only with investment type properties. How about residential properties? I always get the question, family selling a house and it appreciated and they want to know how to save on capital gains, but that's not what your company is about, not about residential. Is that correct?
Well, real estate can be divided into two categories. One would be described as personal use property, and the other one is considered to be business or investment property. So a residence in and of itself could fit either one of those two categories. If, in fact, you live in a residence, that would be considered personal, or you can own a residential property and rent it to others, and that's considered a business property. So you can own, you can benefit by what we call, called Section 1031, which is the part of the revenue code that governs these like-kind property exchanges. Residents can be eligible, but it cannot be a personal use property. Now, we have had residents that, say, for example, if they own a property and part of that property is used for business purposes, either you have a home office that they've been writing off, or if there's a room or a suite within the house that's like a mother-daughter where they've been renting it, that portion of the sale can also be protected under 1031, and the other portion that was just used for personal use would not fit under that category. It's another part of the tax code called Section 121 that protects gain from a personal property sale if you've used it as your primary residence. But so a residential property can be eligible with the assumption that that residential sale or portion thereof has been used for business or investment purposes.
Okay, but the situation where a family owns and lives in a one-family house, wants to sell it, made some money through appreciation, and wants to buy a bigger one-family house, the 1031 rules do not apply to those situations.
That's correct. That's another part of the tax code that applies called Section 121 that maybe you'd want to talk about on a future show. I can expand if you'd like.
Well, let's hold that thought for a second. Let's focus on 1031 because we're trying to focus on investors and how they get into the market, how they can stay in the market, and how they can prosper in the market.
Okay.
So let's take us through a typical 1031 exchange. A client comes into you and says owns a sixth family and they don't live in it, or they own a warehouse and they want to buy a similar one in a different location or a bigger one or a better one. What are the initial steps that a client takes to start on this 1031 process?
Okay, well, planning's always a big benefit in anything financial, to think down the road and set up your ultimate plan early is a big plus. And in this field, in the 1031 field, it's no exception. In that what happens is once the owner of the sixth family or the real estate goes to set up a contract for sale, that's when the conversation first should start with our firm and with the inclusion of the owner's attorney, that we can plan for these next steps. The first, there are two time clocks that are very sensitive and very critical in accomplishing an exchange, and both clocks start at the time of the closing of the property that's being sold, which we refer to as the relinquished property, the one that's leaving. And so at the time of that sale, the money from the sale, instead of going payable to the seller, gets payable to an exchange account that's held on behalf of the seller. And the money then goes into a bank that's held in a segregated account with the owner's tax identification number associated with it, pending the purchase of other property to replace it. And there are two clocks, as I mentioned. The first one is called an identification period, which is a 45-day time period from the date of the sale that properties, potential properties, are to be listed on a form and submitted to either our firm or another eligible recipient, that properties are listed as possible properties to purchase. And I'll mention here that if you sell a single property, you can take that money and buy multiple replacement properties with it. It's not necessarily one for one. So any properties that you're considering purchasing gets put on the list. And then the second clock is called the exchange period clock that ends 180 days from the date of the closing of the relinquished property sale, or 6 months, but 180 days in specific, that all closings, all purchases need to be completed by that 180th day to be eligible for protection from capital gains tax. So the process for that next step is that the property owner would notify our firm that they would like funds released payable to the seller of property that they're interested in buying. We then notify the bank to release funds from that account held up specifically for their use and towards the first the contract down payment and ultimately towards the purchase. And that's the complete cycle.
And so if a client says, well, I don't want to deal with a company, let my lawyer hold it in escrow until I find a new place, that doesn't cut it under the regulations, right?
Correct. To act as qualified intermediary, you need to be what's called an unrelated party. And by related, the tax code specifically mentions attorneys, accountants, financial planners, any personal relationships. So they want to have established a true arm's length third party, non-related to the property owner, that is in charge of this entire process. So you're correct. Property owner's attorney would not be an eligible recipient of those funds.
And how about a property owner who says, you know, I'm selling this place for $1 million. I need $100,000 to pay off a debt or a bill or a kid's college tuition or something like that. Are they allowed to take some money out of the transaction, or what are the effects of that?
Yes, they are permitted to take money out. It's called BOOT, B-O-O-T, or the taxable portion of a transaction. So it's not an all-or-nothing scenario. So if the need arises that, say, $100,000 is required for personal use, at the time of the sale, $100,000 would be made payable to the property owner, and then the balance of the sale would be made payable to the exchange account. And tax would be owed and due on the $100,000, and the taxes then would be paid the following April for that taxable event.
Fritz, I always counsel clients when they come in and they say, I want to sell something and then buy something. I always tell them, well, normally things work in that order, but sometimes they don't work in that order. Sometimes one doesn't happen. Sometimes another one happens before the other one happens. What happens if one of these transactions, you sell your property, you can't find a property or close within the 180-day period? What are some things that the seller can now do?
Well, once the 180-day period is expired, it becomes a taxable event. So we recommend that property owners consider listing on their property identification form that I mentioned, that they would list a property. In addition to real estate that they're considering, they would look to invest in eligible investments such as mineral rights or something that's similar to act similar to a real estate investment trust. It's called a Delaware statutory trust, whereby they're large properties, and the property owner that's selling would invest and own just a small portion of a large property and not actively manage the new property, but just receive a check every month based on that investment. And there are many choices that can be made, and it can be a fallback option or a primary option. If somebody wants to get out of active management of real estate, for example, they can go into these types of properties that are can be very conservative, depending on which ones are selected, but ones that we get involved with are conservative investment options. And as I say, mineral rights, where you can own just a small portion of thousands of oil and gas wells throughout the country and just get a royalty check every month. So there's different ways to ensure that you don't pay that capital gains tax, and you can mix and match. You can buy, say, a condominium in Florida with some of the money. You can buy mineral rights with some of the money. You can buy one of these Delaware statutory trust properties, and then diversify your risk, which we are always an advocate for those that people that like to consider various investments.
So you would diversify rather than, you know, diversify among these Delaware trusts and maybe buy, you know, an investment condo somewhere or a smaller property somewhere, rather than put all this money into, although you could put all the money into a Delaware statutory trust, it's probably prudent to spread things across a lot of different investments.
Yes, it makes sense, too. We have a lot of people that we deal with in the 1031 world that are very heavily invested, especially in New York real estate. And there's concern there. There might be another bubble developing, those kinds of things. And so when people ask, well, what can I do to diversify this risk and make my life simpler, you can then buy into some of these other types of products that have worked very well for people. And, for example, the ESPN headquarters in Connecticut was sold as a DST for a considerable amount of money. The tenant is Disney, and so a very solid tenant. And there was, say, a return that you get between 6 and 6.5%, something along those lines, depending on the particular month that people are looking to buy. And with the DST, they go a full cycle. After 5 to 7 years, they mature, and you get your money back. And generally speaking, in addition to that return on an annual basis, you get a profit, a bump at the end, and there's something they call a liquidity event, where that money comes back to you, and the property owner would then have to make another decision of invest in another DST or multiple DSTs or buy real property on their own. You know, as more traditional real estate. And I should include here that all eligible traditional real estate includes all property within the United States and its territories. So if you're selling in New York, you can buy in Florida, you can buy in California or Texas or Hawaii or any of the territories too. So there's a broad option to purchasing traditional real estate and or buy some of these alternative investments that can be very suitable to diversify risk, like I say, which is and also generates revenue on a regular, predictable basis, which is helpful.
So the bottom line is a seller should be looking within this 45 and 180-day period for plan B, C, and D, essentially, if they can't locate another similar type of property that they had in mind.
Correct. And we actually advocate that people start looking before they sell. You should start to consider what would they like to do with this money and talk about it, consider it. People, for example, if I give an example of a retired couple that has, say, several children, and maybe at some point down the road, they would like to be able to get a home that would be deeded to the child at a future date. So, for example, you sell a six-family home in Brooklyn, and you buy a one-family home in Virginia, and you rent it to others now. You can also rent it to your child right off the bat as a business property with two caveats. One is that the child has to list that as their primary residence and that they pay arguably a fair market rent. After a two-year holding period, you are then allowed to do whatever you'd like with that property as far as gift it's concerned or to turn it into a personal property whereby you don't collect rent. But during the exchange window, what we will discuss as a window, is 2 years after the purchase, and similarly before you sell a property 2 years prior should all be considered business use property. So it's just a way of family planning, estate planning, that you do look long-term, and how can you get a strategy developed whereby you accomplish your needs, your family's needs, and ultimately a bequest or estate planning needs. And it all works to keeping your portfolio, your asset base maximized, and to be able to make your life simpler, because many times people are looking to get out of a more complicated situation into a simpler situation of real estate holdings.
And Fritz, getting back to this topic that where we started talking about me counseling my clients that things always don't happen in order, say an investor wants to buy a property, if for some reason has to buy a property before they sell their property. How can you help them? Can you help them in that situation?
Yes. In this circumstance where a property, in other words, what you're asking is if a property becomes very attractive and is available on the market right now and you cannot wait for the sale prior to moving forward, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So in that circumstance, we refer to that process as a reverse exchange, which is also permitted under the tax code. And it's a little more complicated in that an LLC is established, a limited liability company, and initially NIDEC, which is the name of our firm, is the sole member of that limited liability company that takes ownership of the new property. And it's parked. They call it in a parked position. Although the property owner has complete control and authority over the property, the LLC's membership is the intermediary during that parked period. And at the time that the property that's intended to be sold is sold, then the membership of the LLC moves from NIDEC to the property holder. So it's a process that the IRS has sanctioned and to accommodate that particular need. So it's permissible. We try to avoid it just because there's a couple of extra steps, but when it's needed to be applied, it can be very handy to not lose a property that is ideal for the person that is contemplating doing an exchange.
And Fritz, are there any changes coming down the line that that you're hearing about, or proposals that may change these 1031 rules, or either expand them, contract them, or create a whole new different set of capital gains rules?
Well, there's always chit-chat over the years. You know, we've been doing these now for 23 years, and politically speaking, you hear a lot of people in Washington that look at what they see in an erroneous way as missed revenue that they could tax. So there's always this discussion of how can we confine or limit the 31 applications so we can spend more money in Washington. But the error of that concept is it's a phantom profit, because if people have to pay that tax, they won't sell. And so it's not a missed tax. It's just handcuffing the economy by not allowing more efficient use of property. So even though we do hear about this oftentimes, with the whole reworking of the tax code, there's always rumored, could they limit 1031 or modify the application? And so we kind of let that come and go. There are different groups. I know the National Association of Realtors, which is probably the largest organization that encourages real estate investment and the development of real estate, which the federal government has also been endorsing through low interest rates, in large part to try to promote more affordable mortgages to be able to bring the real estate market back. Similarly, 1031 helps real estate grow and prosper in this country. So we don't really see it as a credible threat, because it just doesn't make any sense, but you never know. There's never 100% surety of anything as we move forward, but we don't really see any credible threat because of the damage that it would do to the economy and to the real estate market.
Yes,
so
real estate is a big economic engine, and we hope they don't tinker, you know, trying to squeeze a few more dollars out and kill the goose.
Exactly. It would backfire in a serious way and actually reduce revenue for the government in the end with the short-sighted thought that people will just pay this tax in a wanton manner and it wouldn't affect their behavior, which just isn't the case. That hasn't been the behavior pattern of taxpayers in general. They don't want to have their hard-earned revenues just eroded through needless tax, so they prefer not to do so. So we don't expect this to take place. From a regulatory position, otherwise, I'd say the biggest tightening of this field has been within related party transactions. So it's very important to get advice from attorneys such as yourself and in concert with NYDEC to talk about how to navigate when different transactions that are including related parties, buying to or selling from one related party to another. So that's been the biggest area of limitation development, I'd say, over the last 10 years. And I should point out that these exchanges are not red flags to the IRS. NYDEC is unique in the industry to standing behind its clients throughout the three-year statute of limitations, and we go to defend them in case that they're challenged by the IRS. And thankfully, we've never lost in our 23-year history. We've gone to tax court to defend them, and we're very fastidious about what we do to make sure that all the rules, not only the form, but the intent behind the rules are followed. And so if you do everything properly, these do not trigger audits. However, if an audit is conducted on a return and an exchange was completed during that year, they will look at it very carefully to make sure that the whole process was done according to the rules and that there weren't any offenses. And it can be an inadvertent offense. Sometimes people don't know that they, and that's why competent support's really important in this case.
Well, Fritz, we're coming very close to the end of the show, and 25 years later, since that 1991 change in the law, you are still around, but I'm sure you have some competitors. So we're going to give you an opportunity. Why should we contact NYDEC when there seem to be dozens or hundreds of exchange companies popping up all over the place? Why are we calling NYDEC?
Okay. Well, I would say certainly you touched on longevity. It's very important. You want to make sure that the company that's selected has been around and will be around. Secondly, a base of knowledge. We certainly have arguably the strongest knowledge and ability and background and history in this field, the 1031 field, of anybody, not only regionally but nationally. We're called upon to weigh in on the different aspects and interpretation of not only the code but its regulations. But one of the things that is most important to us and always has been is the safety of the money of the people that are selling. So we've also established the most secure method of finance, of protecting these accounts. And we work what we refer to as a dual signature relationship with eligible banks in our New York region, whereby money cannot leave the accounts, not only without NYDEC's authorization, but also with the acknowledgement of the property owner to the bank before any money can leave the account. So not only are the accounts insured by the bank, we are bonded professionally too without ever having a claim on our insurance bonding in these 24 years. But also the bank is standing behind the property owner by saying no money will leave this segregated account without your signed acknowledgement, a property owner. And so it's the ultimate in safety. So that's always been our focus. So it's knowledge, it's support. We've maintained more of a boutique operation. We're not paper shufflers. We're always accessible. And we've pride ourselves in making friends with all the people we work with. And our biggest business is return clients, both from the attorneys as well as the property owners that we've served over many years. And so we enjoy what we do and look forward to developing new relationships.
And that's why we invited you on the show. You are the premier exchange company out there, most knowledgeable, and we appreciate spending the last half hour with you learning about 1031 exchanges, Fritz.
My privilege. Robert, I appreciate your knowledge, and I know that your client base has always been a very good group to work with because they come into the process good leg up of understanding, which helps us as we further the team approach on making sure that the objectives of the property owner are met.
Perfect. And Fritz, maybe we'll have you on in the near future. We'll talk about how potentially some people who don't qualify for 1031 exchanges, people who own personal use residences, their own one-family house, might be able to have what the tax ramifications are, even if there are no regulations out there to blunt them or reduce them. But that'll be for another show. We appreciate you coming on and sharing your knowledge, your 25-year knowledge in this field with us.
Thank you very much for having the opportunity of being on the show, and look forward to the next chance. So thank you very much.
Good. Perfect, Fritz. Well, that was Fritz Trinklein. And we have just concluded today's radio program. Thanks to Blog Talk Radio for hosting our show. And thanks to our guest, Fritz Trinklein, the president of New York Deferred Exchange Corporation, a company that does exchanges, better known as 1031 exchanges, allowing investors in real estate the opportunity to save taxes, keep money in their own pocket, reinvest it, create jobs for people and other opportunities rather than have it go into Uncle Sam's pocketbook. And Fritz tonight shared his insights with us with regard to those types of transactions and how to accomplish them. This is How's New York signing off. God bless Brooklyn and all of its people. Wishing you a good night and a good morning and a good afternoon. I am your host, Robert Howe.
I love to look up at the clouds in her hair. She's learned to wear like a crown. If you've been a rose.